present today. I was looking at Calgary, Kokanen, Ringstead, building the Sherman Furnace. Please let the record know that staff person Diana Smith is here. The purpose of the meeting is to take testimonies concerning the question of license and bonded contractors. Perhaps any problems that was experienced person not being licensed within the state of Alaska, perhaps applying that trade. Particularly, we are concerned with those who may be advertising in local papers who, again, are not, not going to be licensed in the process. One of the things we hope to do is to find the problem is of magnitude is to perhaps strip the statue or try to get the agreement with the local newspapers, particularly, that they will not accept an ad from a contractor unless the person showed evidence of at least the license. The bonding is located beyond their capacity, and the person has a contract. But please not hold themselves out in the public as being qualified to get back next to at least a license process. We understand there are some 1,900 businesses throughout the state of Alaska that are voiced a concern in this issue. I was asked by House Speaker Bill Haley some time ago to hold hearings around the state, but get a handle on the matters yet and see if it's necessary to introduce new legislation, strengthen the current statutes on the books, or do whatever's necessary to address the problem. So with that, I'd open it up for perhaps any comments that committee members may have. John,
yeah. Well, I've been in Alaska for many times we've had situations where, especially in the home building market, where local home builders perhaps found that it wasn't economically feasible for them to, with the interest rate and land costs and whatever problems, to maybe take on a project. And then I found, if I was a contractor myself, I found that a lot of times some outside outfit would come in with a new plan, and many times I would be stuck. We had to do a lot of work. The old days, small contractors, we had some protection in our lien laws. It seemed to me that the lien laws turned around to where now sometimes you have to, especially the small contractors, have to just walk away from the job rather than go through the process. Processes, as I know, are right now to the NEMA process. For instance, that I find that sometimes in our situation, we need some dump trucks. So you need a small backhoe. You just phone someone that has a backhoe or is a dump truck and say, hey, I got to have you out at such and out at such a time. They come out. They don't have time to wait or get people to sign a waiver or write the lien. They look to me for the money. And I, have always had good luck with that type of deal because I figure that's my responsibility quickly to pay them. But however, some other contractors work for that same scenario. The little guy, he goes out there and works for 3 days or 2 or 3 hours or whatever it is. And then because of the lien law being such, he didn't get the right society. Well, you know who he's really working for. He's working for the guy that's phone. He don't know the owner of the property. And I think that in my opinion, the lien law of the state in the last 3 years has taken more in favor, less in favor of the labor, or the one that actually did the work, more in favor of the land. And things of that nature. And I don't know how, in my opinion, that you can stop. We have residency problems in Alaska around. You can come to the state for 30 days here or less, and you get out of that. I don't know how constitutional that we can stop someone to come in and get if they want to get a license to apply for a license. I don't know of any contractors that are turned down to apply for a license because they've got to prove whatever it is, $25. And beyond that, it's the bonding requirement. I don't know if that's possible. If the state on the state level can require beyond the normal state bond to do state work. Right now, I think we have a law that if you're going to work in a public right-of-way, or if you're going to work in a municipality or a state, you've got to have a certain bond, what, $5,000 or something, minimal bond, which almost anyone can get. That doesn't really protect from someone who wants to make the money to run. So I don't know, and I hope some of the witnesses will come up with possible solutions to, but how we would take care of the type of contractor that's taking the money to run. In other words, not saying we have a lot of people in the back. I don't know if they require stiffer regulations on the qualification of the contractor. If you say you are a building contractor, business contractor, higher qualification force. I don't know if that would be the answer. Several states, they require that an applicant pass certain standard of examination and evidence past experience, respective experience or whatever field there is before they can issue a license. So just in a bonding situation, when you get into a bond, it seems to me that the bonding company certainly looks towards the experience of the bond. Background here, 1 day or 100 years, if part of the body of the company is pretty cold, hard and cold on the body. So I would be very receptive to solutions of how we can protect the local citizenry that is affecting all contractors.
Comment would be that we can, there are problems out there, and what we need to do is nail down the problem so we can figure out what to do with it. A lot of it, I think, has been general terms that if you can identify the problem, then we can worry about the answer. One of the
Thank you. Full turn. Consultant memorandum on consumer protection is, of course, the kind of client consumer buying homes and having a bill. Indicates that there are some licensed, but a great many non-licensed contractors who are doing business in the state of building, and then actually either costing the money, not doing the work properly, or one thing or another. That's like introducing counterfeit money into the general rent. In other words, they necessarily compete with any established contractors who have reputation to maintain and take jobs from people, and then also put the whole industry in jeopardy because of their actions. We're stretching to all about bad money, right? Not good. So I think that following up some way to assure that their his performance, even though many of these are small contractors, I think will tend to protect the Alaska contracting industry as well. I have no solution to that particular problem. I'd like to hear about
Yeah, I think the questions that I would have and some of the ideas, number one, I'm just reading through some of the notes here on the question of whether the Consumer Protection Agency is really being able to do their job as far as following up on these things, and if there's something we can look into as far as what their job is. I don't know if we're going to hear testimony from them tonight. But I'd like to really get the situation solved from the standpoint of the consumers, and it's really this Consumer Protection Agency doing their job as far as what has to be done. That would be one thing. And then, of course, as you suggested, Chairman Furness, maybe perhaps a stricter enforcement or changing in the actual statutes, I'd have to see what the present statutes are.
Do we have persons to refer that? I think that the possibly, I mean, we're trying to protect that, not only the students, but also our local contractors who are working taken away from that. You know, there's just so much work out there, taking dollars out there, adding to that. Providing the vendors or taking money around the contractors. From the local contractors across the street already, because of taking away work. But also, these are bad persons, people, public supplies, through no fault of the local number, different contractors. So I think that not only the consumer, but primarily, I think we want to try to protect the local from.
Let's take the first person to the hill.
I want to put it in the statement of the present structure to be close to the.
We want to make this probably as informal as possible. You know, somewhere in there.
Well, if you will, if you'll take the name of the
representative. Jimmy W. Hill, H-I-L-L.
Again, who do you represent the name
of? Pardon?
And who do you represent?
Hill's Floor Covering Service.
Go ahead. Again, this is informal.
In our own business, the biggest problem that we've been having is since the economy in the lower 48 tightened up, which happens every time that it does, we get hit by an influx of people, and they're coming in for nothing and working and going back out before anybody gets hold of them. I mean, it's. I don't know if a person needs more legislation. I think what we need is to enforce what we have. The people that work here year-round and have been in business here, we've been hit pretty hard in the last few years to stick with all the regulations and whatever that is out now, and we have complied with them. But to bid competitively on the market is pretty tough with these guys coming in, 20, 30, 40,000 below you, job after job. There's probably several cases that are going on now, and for my own self, I would just like to see you could start at one end of town if you had anybody to enforce what regulations that are on the books now, and probably stop 80% of it on one sweep through town. There's enough laws on the books now that anybody that's not complying with it could be stopped.
So perhaps we need more, an additional inspector or someone to go around and check that these people are.
Well, I don't think there's. Well, I've been laying carpet up here since 1968, and I never have seen anybody on any kind of residential work checking. I mean, it's.
I understand, like you say, but say you're in the carpet business and somebody wants carpet in their bedroom or their living room or next room. That's very difficult.
Okay.
Of course. How would you suggest that could be done from the local level? Now, we have, you know, David Bacon and everything that you're familiar with, I'm sure. State finance projects,
people
certain
criteria
that we got to handle on.
Hopefully.
Well, hopefully. That's true.
I could name you five jobs in town right now that are probably really hopefully.
Well, but our law says, or the Department of Labor is supposed to enforce that.
There has to be somebody checking jobs before
it's
enforced. As far as your remodel work goes, back to your first question, I don't think you'll ever stop that. But there's probably maybe 100, 150 new dwellings that are under permit right now. But you can start in the North Pole area and come right on in with one man. And I would be willing to bet you, if you find 40% that are being done by a licensed and bonded contractor, that I would be high. And that could be stopped.
Are you talking in housing?
Yes, sir.
How can you, or how would you say an excavator comes and excavates the foundation for a house? And I assume I'm from Anchorage, but in Anchorage, there's some big builders, but a majority of the builders build 3 or 4 or 5, 6 houses at the most. And a lot of them just build 2 or 3 at a time until they get them done. And they go shopping, and they got the cheapest plumber, and they're interested in making money, which I suppose everybody is, but I don't know how we could police on a state level them to have a plumber that comes in and does their plumbing, or somebody that comes in and does their flat work or their concrete, or lay their blocks. Apparently that's done by the either square foot or by the
true
block. How could you recommend that being enforced or to make sure that whoever did that work would be licensed and bonded?
It's right in your state law that any project over, $5,000 to $10,000 requires a state licensed bonded contractor. Every house that's built is on a building permit. Your general contractor, no matter who it is, has to show, you know, a payout. You start right at the top, just like you would on a state project. I'm not so concerned with somebody coming in and saying that I can do the job for $50 less. What I am concerned about is that the man pays the same price for his contractor's license, his business license, and goes by the same set of rules that we play by. If that's not the case, then he shouldn't be there, or else we shouldn't be there, one of the two.
On the couple of questions first, you said a lot of the people are coming in from outside, going to work, whenever things get tight down south. They're coming in, running their own shops, as opposed to coming in going to work for other local people.
They're subbing out.
Most of them come in as subcontractors.
Yes, sir.
Then on the, you were saying the residential stuff, you think that like maybe not more than 40% of the people actually building houses in town are actually licensed contractors?
The people in our end of it, floor covering end. I can't speak for the general contractor on the job. That I wouldn't.
I'm talking about your specialty
contractor, your floor covering part of it.
Most of the generals are probably licensed.
I would say so, probably. Yes.
But it's the guys that they're hiring
that they're subbing back to.
So if we're going to somehow address that, I guess we can address it in two different directions. One issue we're talking, I guess, is somewhat of a local hire. But if they're coming in and starting businesses, it's pretty hard. What we have to do then is license. Or monitor the licensing process.
That would be a real good start. That would stop about 60% of the problems that we have right now. That's what I'm asking, is if we all get a fair shake out of it, and from that case on, it's going to have to be competitive bidding. I mean, until you get back into your Davis Bacon, and then that's another thing later on I like to talk about. But for your residential, at least get it off on ground zero to where we've got a fair shake with these guys coming in from Seattle, working 3 months, and they're heading back out here in another month and taking the money with them.
With most of these guys coming in short term, turning around and going right back out, that's what we're trying to monitor. You have to come in, you're setting up your business, you're getting your business license, your contractor's license, your bonding, this sort of thing. They're just coming in, effectively doing none of that, going, just lining up with different general contractors saying, hey, I need work. How do we get at those people? Do we are we going to have to set up a program where they're actually going through the inspection process of, you know, doing that, or going to the generals and saying, okay, who do you have subbing for you? And then just take a list and say, you know, are these, we're trying to match them up with the state register of licensed contractors, or
very simple, yes.
Is that the best way to get at these?
All you'd have to do would be to talk to Mr. Smith down the street that holds a general contracting license or whatever on the house. He's got to show a list of his payroll records for whatever sub that he subs to. If he gets nailed one time, he's not going to pay his character out of Seattle. The only way he can get around that is to put the guy on his payroll and pay all the benefits, whatever, on him, and it's going to cost you more than it is to sub it back out to a legitimate contractor. Very simple. You nail the guy that's got the handle on the money, and that stops it.
Going back to the general contractor,
that's
essentially.
That's the bottom line right there. He's the man with the sole responsibility on it for payroll records and the whole nine yards.
I don't know, maybe as another question. At this point, most of the general contractors probably don't appear to be all that concerned about
right.
Licensing or legal aspects of who's working for them.
We never used to be there until we got in some problems, and we really are now.
So maybe somewhere between, you know, I agree with you, we don't need more laws, but somewhere between the state making the general contractors more responsible and the state being more responsible themselves just in monitoring their own regulations is probably where we ought to be looking.
Right, I don't think you need more laws. I think you just need to enforce what you have on the books now. If you have a person in the either wage and hour or licensing bureau to take 3 days off and do some field work, you could get enough book work in there to last for a year and a half.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Furness. What type of discrepancies can you see? Maybe you can point to some specifics where you're saying that they're taking advantage of the present regulations, the present statutes, as far as you're saying the contractors are doing that, or is that who's violating the law, and why do you think that they're getting a sort of an unfair edge?
I would assume probably that the contractors are, to the point that they're getting a cheaper labor rate out of it. Well, maybe I could give you this type
sure.
of an example. Say you're Joe Blow down the street uh-huh. again, building a house that you're running the general contractor. You catch this guy up with a truck and he's doing his tools in a paper bag, and you say, "I'll lay your carpet for $1.50 a yard."
Mm-hmm.
Going rates $4 a yard. If you've got a chance, you know you haven't been checked in 5 years or 10 years, and you go ahead and write the guy a check for it, and he's gone out the door, and hopefully you've got a half decent carpet job. There's a lot of people that will go for that. And like I say, when the economy tightens up below, we've got a bigger influx of people last year and this year that are doing that. I mean, it's a simple matter. But on the other hand, you've got the other guy down the street that's paying his licensing and his insurance, and he's charging $4 a yard. He has to. He has to live here. I mean, the same guy that's the general contractor that's taking the nickel off the top is the guy that built it for nothing and charging Alaska rates, rent. He's not charging Seattle rates that this guy's up here for.
Well, just that I want to sort of see what they were, if the out-of-state people are coming in and taking advantage of it, I'd like to see how that could be changed in the law, if that was just something that's just competitive, just fair.
I think you've got the laws on the book, right?
They're on the book, but they're just not
in the
being
enforced. All you've got to do is say, hey, you need, before you step foot in this house, if you're going to subcontract.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what you need. You need your specialty license from the state. You need your bonding. You need your business license.
And you're saying that they're not doing that?
No.
Okay.
I doubt there's 10% of the carpet layers in this town that are operating legal right.
So it's in the enforcement then? Basically.
Yes, sir.
Problem. Thank you.
I seem to remember some other hearings we've had that indicated that not just the problem with small contractors or independent labor, the Irby North State on the power line, Irby got the contract to very lax interpretation of small. I still have my own reserve, my own doubt about the fidelity of their joint venture with North State.
that's the case, where you have a multi-million-dollar contractor moving in without making all the technical laws. The bill is correct, but it's the economy outside. And some of these big companies will bid low on contracts primarily because they need to keep the cash flow and the turnover. They need to lose money. But they're buying time for the economy to improve. They make it extremely difficult to maintain a cadre of trained business in the state. They start getting either overrun by the horde of small itinerants or a few of these big for the national, they have to keep the machinery working with it. I think in this case, in that case, of course, the case was in the court and the decision was rendered, but that probably does point to a need to tighten up the law in that particular there are a few loopholes in that. I think Mr. Hiller's reckoning we have to get some of the people out of the place and offices looking at some new jobs.
Yeah, I think on the intertie thing, we have a situation where it's kind of a joint venture by somebody local and a license, and they got around a whole bunch of things like that. I think that I find, especially in the interview area, probably up here too, a lot of that same thing happening. That there'd be framing contractors that are legitimate, that do have the license, and they will hire sub framing out. The guys, you look on the projects and you see California license plates, all over the states, and these guys are here. But they're actually working under somebody else's license or permit. You have the same thing in the trucking industry, where you see a lot of the stickers on the side of the truck that's just stuck on the side. They truck over, and they're working under a certain permit, and they're paying. And at this here, I don't know what. It's a real problem. I mean, I know it's a problem, but, legally, if somebody, I know when we hire trucks, in my particular business, I have an insurance. Hopefully, I'm legitimate all the way. Everything that I'm supposed to do, I hope to do, I try to do, and we have insurance that in event anybody that would be working for us as a subcontractor didn't have insurance, they would automatically be covered, and we pay that premium based on our gross and the amount that we pay ourselves. And so it's up to us, beneficial to us, to get certificates of insurance along with the business license to prove that it's not double insured, or otherwise we would be paying two premium insurance. So that's one solution, but there's a lot of problems. I'm not certain that I have a solution for it. Hopefully I'll hear it.
May I say something? As the general, or as the, as you well know, as the originating contract holder, whatever, you are liable. So why, in the case, what we're talking about as far as your subbing and your floor covering, whoever that general contractor is the originating contractor. He is liable. Whether John Doe walks in and says, I've got a business license, the contractor's license. If he doesn't, I not check it. It's his responsibility to pay withholding, to pay everything on that man if it can be proven otherwise. So that's the only place that you've got to stop it is right at the top.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You made a comment before about carpet layers coming in and hopefully getting a good carpet. Do you see more of a problem, or maybe it's six, one half dozen, the other? Is it more of a problem of getting sloppy work, or is it more of a problem just the fact that people are coming in, playing by a different set of rules, getting the jobs and splitting, leaving the Alaskan people without getting the work? Or is it partly both?
Partly both. The economy has been bad enough in the last few years that you're starting to shake loose some of the longer established good mechanics from the states now. This year I've noticed that. Usually every year you'll get your people that float in, float back out. This year we have gotten more good people coming up, guys that have just flat had financial problems and have been established for years down below. But once once again, the big problem is that if they don't play by the same ground rules, the same expenses you have, you cannot be competitive bidding.
Continue on another question. Partly, we're going to try and get educated here. The licensing regulations, the bonding regulations, all that, both that's all coming through Department of Labor, monitored through Department of Labor.
Yes, sir.
So if someone's going to be inspecting you, it should be out of the Department of Labor, yeah. Right? Have they really been doing anything that you know of? Do they have a program or a policy? Some of those things that you're aware that theoretically they do. In reality, is there something going on?
In the last several years on the commercial work, since the original works of the pipeline died down, they've been monitoring the commercial stuff a lot closer. Residential, as far as I know, hasn't been.
Anything else? You think we need to get in and monitor the commercial stuff closer? Or are we close to adequate?
I think you've come a long way in the right direction there. It takes a while because somebody has to squawk, and then, you know, I know it's virtually impossible to cover everything. But like I say, I think it would take one trip through town as far as the residential stuff goes, and it would have to happen within the next week or two because they're going to be closing down for the winter. It's in the last stages now, and then it's next fall before or next spring again, as far as your framing them goes.
Additional questions?
We haven't got into just one comment. I'm trying to find a solution. Probably the best solution, in my opinion, is to enforce the law, whether it's constitutional or not, let them sue us if they think it's out on, enforce it as we interpret it. But what I wanted to get, you said something about, you had some comments you'd like to get in about the Davis-Bacon Act, maybe while you're.
Yes, I do. I can't quite understand sometimes exactly how the jobs are picked to check or whatever, but there's some work going on up to the U now. I know it takes a long rollover sometimes, but and I guess that the Labor Department is checking on it now. Like I say, they've came a long ways, and I'm not criticizing. They've got their manpower funneled out, I think, now to where they are keeping a pretty close tab on the commercial work. You know, when you've got somebody bidding against you that's, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars lower on the same job, that something has to give someplace, because you know your own self, what you've got in it, what it's going to take to get it done. And if you can just figure that you're making minimum wage, and somebody comes in 60,000 under you, that there's got to be someplace something that's going to give. And there's several jobs that are going to be coming up. I would personally like to see a real close eye put on.
Mr. Hill, are you saying then that the Department of Labor is doing selective monitoring and probably spot inspection of certain jobs as far as the wage rates are concerned?
I think so, and I think they're, like I say now, I think they're starting to do a lot better job. There was a few years there that anything went, and now it's starting to tighten down, and they're starting to do their job. But I would like to see, you know, if I'm on one job and get checked, I would like to see the gentleman on the next job get checked. I don't think it should be just one job gets hit here and one hit here, and if somebody from Seattle is inland, then he walks in, walks back out, and he's gone. But he doesn't get checked.
Okay. Are you saying then that there are instances where contractors are not paying the Davis-Bacon wage rate?
I'm sure there's been cases of it. There's cases that are going on now and one coming up that I would specifically like to see checked. Yes, sir.
That's interesting. Yeah, Representative Ringstead in Calgary.
Lee, are you a strong supporter of Davis-Bacon, or do you just want to all play by the same rules?
Yeah, you kind of did. I would like to keep the minimum wage. I would like to keep the minimum wage up. I don't want to get to the point where it's It's ridiculous that you can't build a state building, or you can't do this, you can't do that. But I think it does give, whether it's the data shaken or any kind of rule that you set or a regulation that you have for bonding, contracting, whatever, I think at least it gives a basis to bid by. I mean, whether you use that or you use whatever you want to use, it at least if it's enforced, it gives you and me and you something to base our bids on that we know basically that we have to have out of it.
Don't put too much of
the jobs that in the jobs that we've been doing that had the requirements of the Davis-Bacon requirements, or that had state funds or federal funds in them, they required us as the contractor to, we had to name our employees, and the inspector, when we made progress payments, the inspector, whoever was on the job, before we got our progress payment, we had to submit our payroll records, an audit or a certified payroll to them before we got our payment. The certified payroll could have been falsified, I agree, but kind of dynamite thing if you're doing it, you know, as far as penalties involved doing something like that. So I don't know, you know, if there's some local some particular job that you know that's local that are using government or state funds that are not, you don't think you're paying, I'd certainly be interested to knowing who that might be, formally or informally. I think we can find out some things.
Informally only, sir. It's already been turned in. That one has.
It's certainly given a person an advantage. I had to put a commitment. I had my first experience in completing now the certified payroll. It's a tremendous amount of paperwork. Mm-hmm. You don't want to falsify that, deserve to go to jail.
There's always the question there, too. Say you're a small block layer. You come in and bid a job for X number of dollars. Whether you're the general or a small block layer, if you bid wrong and you lose money on it, where does the line draw that you pay yourself minimum wage? You take it out of the left pocket and write a check to yourself to pay yourself minimum wage, and then you take the money back once you wrote it to satisfy the state law? I mean, where does it start or end? I think it can get to the point it just gets buried in paperwork and does nothing. I think basically what you're looking for is if you can just keep legal contractors bidding, your level of bidding is going to find its own level. If you've got legitimate contractors bidding, there's not going to be a nickel spread on your bids. It's going to do everything so they can come in and make a good buck and still get out. It's the guy that comes in 60,000 low, 100,000 low, 1.5 million low. But you can go right down your bids, whether it's general bids, sub bids, the whole nine yards, for the last 6 months up here, and you'll find it. Just think, right down the line. I don't think there's any state or public works bid that hasn't went that way.
Well, I've been
doing
the days, the old days of the handshake, doing a job on a handshake.
Yeah, long gone.
Almost every job that you do has got to be on a bid basis. Or in the past, we did a lot of our work go do the job somewhere else.
Right.
Like I said, that's very few and far between. But right now, with the especially doing state work, I think our law allows some loopholes that perhaps we should tighten up. But I think the law allows. I know for a fact that if we have a job. And we need a bunch of fill, we can sub that out to a trucking company. And we don't have to require, they can bid that job without, and not have to. If we can pay that without them requiring them to be a certified payroll at the point of making. And the other, say, we had a job down in Cuba that required putting some culverts in. And we didn't want to take one of our backhoes down there. We hired a local guy. Son came out for $2,000 or $3,000, whatever it was, for this cover. And there was no problem with that. But that's an area where, and it was all legitimate, as far as I'm concerned. but it was an area that could be abused, you know, perhaps, or maybe some of these areas. Sometimes you, the trouble with tightening up them areas, that father and son that had the back door that put it in, if I had said, you got to put a certified payroll to do the job, he'd said, second. He said, I ain't going through that mess. I'll do the job for so much money, and then put it in. So, you know, there's...
True. I don't think there's anybody arguing that. I think if it was all done that way, fine. Then it would all fall to its own level that way. If it's going to be done the other way, and then you've got the guy that's trying to stay in line with what regulations, and I would like to see a lot of them dropped off the books, but since we have them and you know they're not going to be, at least give the guy who's trying to abide halfway by them, give him a fighting chance to come in on a even bid with a guy that's not. That's our biggest problem. Right, you know, either go one way or go the other way. I would love to go back to the fact that, you know, I'll come out and do your job for you for $3,000, and when we get done, you pay me and I'll pay my income taxes, and that's all there is to it. But I don't know how you'd ever see it happen with the way the stuff is now. But where you do get nailed is if you're paying all the rest of the stuff, and then you're trying to make the bid, and then you just, well, forget it. You've got more money tied up in getting the paperwork done to start with than you are going to make off of the job if you bid with anybody else that's not doing it.
Do you think that would one possible solution be to increase the bonding to locals and let the state, what do you think about the state, you know, bonding on a state that, you know, small contract? Be the state that, you know, the bonding companies are
right.
All from New Jersey or Connecticut or some place, and they do things pretty cold and hard sometimes. Do you think that is a possible solution to raise the bonding requirement? This would be a better handle to find out if you in fact are a state local contractor.
No, sir, I don't think it would be, because there's a million ways around that too. I think just if you enforced what you had, that you'd solve 90% of your problem. I don't think there'd be any sense of putting any more of a strain on the guys that are probably small, trying to start out, than what you've got now. But I think it would stop. If you just enforced what you had, it would stop a lot of it.
It's going to have to get quite a bit bigger than what we've talked about tonight, really. I think there'll have to be an inspection. I believe in the commercial field that that's been pretty well taken care of. Residential, it's not. And I believe it's going to have to get quite a bit bigger to solve the problem. It's going to have to be manned and staffed. It may be such a thing as it could be self-supporting. Say a house being built, like they did it with subject systems in Alaska Housing Finance. A house that's being built, financed Alaska Housing Finance money. The subject system has to be installed by a certified installer or inspector. Or they won't find it, same as that. I think you could use that type of situation as far as the plumbing, the electrical, the framing, whatever. And control it somewhat that way. It's more regulations than I'm sure nobody wants. But I don't know any of the truth. One thing is the general contractors are liable to make sure that their subs are licensed and bonded. A lot of them aren't. A lot of the generals, if they can get by without it, thank goodness, they're going to take the cheapest price. But I really don't know any other answer for it. We can get after it.
We may have hit on something there that we can work with them after housing. You got to go to money. Right now, we're inspecting or requiring some sort of certification on our septic systems, that sort of thing. You'd hate to have to come out and say, okay, you get one guy inspect the plumbing, and one guy inspect the heat, and one guy inspect the flooring, and one, you know, down the line. Would it be functional to try and say, through Alaska Housing, require that a certification of the bonding of the contractor and subcontractors, rather than actually inspecting every little, I mean, that's going to get to be a headache for not only the builder, the bureaucracy, and the poor buyer. It's going to pay the nickel in the end. It'll take him an extra 6 weeks to get his house inspected. Would that be functional to try and just have somebody, rather than inspecting each one, just effectively checking the contractors?
If
the contractors know they're being checked on, they're probably going to put out a quality product.
Right. It's more than just the licensing and bonding, the contractor licensing and bonding. A lot of it is in... Well, like the mechanical inspection, the certificate of fitness. I don't have anything against the idea. I think it's a good idea, but they're not enforceable. They may be in the commercial field, but they're not residential. I've been in business in Fairbanks since 1974, and I've had a master's license with the city of Fairbanks since 1976. The state came out with a certificate of fitness card, which is a journeyman's license, about 3 years ago, I believe. It's the first I knew. I have never taken the test because they won't enforce it. They enforce it against the people that do take the test. The ones that don't take the test are home free. They don't have the manpower to enforce it. So why should I go down and take the test when all these other yahoos are running around the way? And I've talked to the state inspector about it. She's mentioned to me I should come take the test 3 times. I said, show me you can enforce it. I'll be glad to take it. I think it's a good idea, but there's got to be enforcement against everybody, not just a few. It's not enforced not only in that area, but the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska is my biggest customer last year. And they know it. I got the contract license, the farming, and all that. Not the certificate of fitness, because there's no enforcement. I'd like to see some enforcement on that. I think that will cure a lot of the other problems. But I believe that the total thing is enforcement of all the licensing, all the laws that you've got. And I don't know of any sure cures, but I believe, like Mr. Rangstad said, where Alaska Housing Finance is supplying the money, that's where the hold is. That's what you got to hold on to. I'd use it.
Is that certificate a worthwhile document, worthwhile license? Should we have that in place at all?
I agree. Yeah, I think it should. It's a journeyman's license. As far as I know, a master's license. I don't know how you can tie it together with a contractor license. Maybe not issue a contractor. Maybe that's the idea, but they don't tie the two together. One got nothing to do with the other. I think it's a good idea, but it's got to be good. I can stay.
One other question about it. You mentioned the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. One of the reasons, perhaps, I'm told is to make sure that they require the general contractors to employ legitimate subcontractors. To your knowledge, are they doing this now, or are they not doing it?
Some are. all the people I work for are pretty legitimate. They hire everybody that's licensed and bond.
No, I'm sorry. Anyway, does Alaska Housing Finance Corporation do any checking of this to assure that their general contractors that are getting money to build houses and using those general contractors themselves?
I don't know. I don't believe so. I'm not sure. Because Alaska Housing, somebody is checking that to a certain extent. Because I have had general contractors ask me if my license number is taken.
Let me recommend for Mr. Copeland.
I think in this regard, the case that occurred, where it's not true, one of the building speculators made a development for planned unit construction, and I think every 6,000 involved would fit the specifications individually. The only problem was the old common sense. I think since that case, they've been a little more picky about that. So that economic pressure, they have brought a little change to how they finance properties.
And they seem to be monitoring the subsidy system with the folks. They have that certification. You know, why they have it every year, I don't know. I got certified for it last year, assuming that was good from now on. But they recertified every year, so I did this year because I don't get in. I think one or two at the moment. Every year. And it's easier just to call for inspection if I'm going to put one in.
They ended up buying a whole company.
In your mind, so this $50 fee and $100 fee goes to some government in your office. And do you think then that, like in California, general contractor's license fee, you have certain criteria that you've got to prove that you're capable of being a general contractor, because you're capable of being a plumbing contractor, and certain criteria, more rigid and a higher fee, would you say that would be the selection? Or would you be in favor of that?
I think it would be part of the solution.
Of course, it doesn't take away from the fact somebody can come in here with nothing and work. That's another issue. But as far as the competency of the...
They're somewhat two different issues here.
I know in particular in your particular field, like in mine, I'm in the heavy equipment where, you know, we don't have too much competition coming in from outside because there's a rough, you know, say 200,000 for a piece of machinery, you know, and you got to have something besides an idea and one job to pay for that. So, but maybe in the plumbers, they come up here in a pickup truck, take their camper off and say, I'm a plumber. Go back to Carol and get a job.
That's what it amounts to. It's awfully hard to compete those type of people where we have the bonding, the insurance, and the licensing every year. Those are trying to build a shop, you know.
Yeah.
And just try to maintain the business.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I was just wondering if you thought we could raise the fee and make it a little bit rougher for contractors to become contractors.
I don't think that's fair to anything. I don't think we would double or triple the contractors that are licensed. Going to kill anybody. Raising the bonding might not hurt much. I mean, the general has to have 5,000 and the special things 2,000.
It's a license bond.
But even more so, the criteria. The criteria would be certain tests. you know, the, for instance, architect, I think they have a board of architects that got this one in because their stand put on last for him. You know, you get a license to be an architect, but you can't design anything or get anything approved without this stamp. And once you get the stamp, you have to meet certain criteria and competencies, the same way a land surveyor.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. That would be somewhat tying your like certificate of fitness together with the contractor certificate.
Yes, thank you, Representative Furness. The question I guess I had was you'd suggested maybe a higher fee for the cost of the bond or something to the contractors, and I was trying to tie that back in that if that money, if there was a higher fee for it, that maybe there would be an increased enforcement, you know, along down the line, because at least that's what we've heard now from the previous testifier and yourself about the fact that they're really not enforcing. Is that correct?
Yeah, the money to hire the people to enforce.
So with the people they've got right now, they're not really getting the job done. They aren't being able to cover all the bases.
I don't know what the State House of Mechanical Inspectors here. Adele is the only one I know of, and she covers everything from barrel to here to barrel and where else. You know? Mm-hmm. How can one person do that in a possible way?
And then another question, and then you also mentioned AHFC, and you said that in the case of loans going through AHFC, that there were times you had mentioned that some were contractors and some were not contractors that were actually doing the jobs, and is that correct? Or?
Well, I don't know about the general contractor on the job, but it's like Mr. Hill was saying, I'm not a specialty contractor. There's a lot of people that are calling themselves general contractors. You don't have general contractors. And they hire people that they don't withhold any money on their checks. There's no state comp on them. They squeak by it. Once in a while, somebody will get hurt, and then there's no insurance. Or one of their subs has no state comp on their health. You know, I had one man tell me the other day, he's got four people. I mentioned something about the state comp. He said, oh, I don't pull any of that out. They've all got their insurance. It doesn't matter. And he says, well, they're not contractors. They have to have contractors. You're not withholding out of their check, it's carrying state comp on their contract. Mm-hmm. So if one of these men get hurt that are working for him, he doesn't have any insurance on it. That's going to fall back to the general contractor. I don't know. People seem to take a chance that I wouldn't take. But there's just an awful lot of it that goes on. It's hard.
And one further question. The contracts that you'd actually do, let's say on a residence that's financed through Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, what requirements do they require you to do to show that you're licensed and bonded and so on and so forth? Is there a requirement that they stipulate, or do you have to comply with, let's say, the Department of Labor or the Borough of Fairbanks or whatever? Maybe you could explain, because
if it's inside the city of Fairbanks, then we have to get them. I see. It's outside. There's nothing. Unless the general contractor itself should happen to ask you for your license. If he wishes not to.
But you don't get specifically involved with AHFC or Alaska Housing Finance, so you go right, you know, deal right with whatever the borough standards are and the requirements and the laws in the borough.
Well,
ordinances. No?
There isn't any.
There's
no enforcement. The state of Alaska has adopted the Uniform Plumbing Code.
I see.
But there's no enforcement. I follow. Anybody can inspect any job of mine anytime. But there's no enforcement. There's a lot of jobs that should be inspected, aren't inspected. People that buy them, these have a piece of junk. And maybe the guys that hit him are gone south by the time the first snow flies, or maybe they're standing up. In the essence, the state of Alaska is supporting them. They're the one carrying the paper down the pumps.
Eventually, the HFC. Thank you.
There's many realtors, especially realtors, who contractors buy. And then they hire and sub out the framer, electrical, painters, lockware, everything is sub. They don't, but they're the builder. we get into a situation that, you know, now I think most of these realtors carry, they've got firms like that. How can we, on a state level, deal with housing? It's one of the toughest ones to do that. I mean, I've worked housing for 20 years, so I see everything that goes on there, but I don't know exactly how that can be implemented. Because you see what's happening in the financing. We talk about the Alaska housing finance. That's on the financing of the houses, not on the construction financing. They're not having anything to do with that. And so I don't know. From a legislative or a state level, we could have any enforcement into that, since that's like getting this building financed right now under a state loan and then require them to go back and see if all the, you know, licensed contractors and so forth. I don't think we have the constitutional right to do that. It's tough. I mean, I don't say it should, but do you have any solution to something like that?
They do that on the septic systems.
Yes, on the septic. Yes, that's, but that's a health matter, I think. That's, you've got to have a health certificate that the septic system is. That's basically what that's all about. But if it's not financed, it's, even though it's a state law, if you don't have to, if you are not using state money to finance this, you don't come under that criteria. You can sell your log cabin. If you just sell it, you don't care the papers on it for free financing. That's not really enforceable.
That's
I don't think that you can control the person building his own house and do it legally. That's not the question that we're, at least my own self, is concerned with. What I think we are concerned with is the general contractor that is building on a larger scale of 2, 4, 10, 20 houses and not proposing to put the cost of the housing up or of your state buildings up. It's to stop the general contractor that's charging the same retail price on the market and then going back and using the scab help or whatever and putting that money in his own pocket and taking it that we're trying to stop. We're not, say, trying to come in and push the price up anymore, I don't think, or whatever, or stop the guy if your own self wanted to build a house. That's up to you. That's America that you want to do that. What we are trying to say is that the guy that's the contractor out there that's taking the illegitimate profit off of it, putting these pennies up pocket, is what we're trying to stop. They can very well be checked. Your laws are on the books to stop that.
Yeah, I was just going to get back to that requirement you were talking about with the HFC on the septic system. Perhaps it seems to me there was some kind of requirement with the Department of Environmental Conservation, which requires you to do a certain kind of septic system and so on, but that is in areas where you don't have, like, sewage and, like, in the Fairbanks, maybe formally, but those would be in the outlying areas. Therefore, you could come under more state jurisdiction.
I think that we've got something vile we can work with the Alaska housing suggestion. Having been on the other end lending my borrower and the contractors, and if I'm going to go out and build 10 houses, if people aren't going to be able to get money to buy them, I'm out of luck. And the contractors are well aware of what Alaska housing will and will not finance. Seeing as how they're running about 90% of the market right now. It might not be that high now, the rates are coming down, but it's close enough. I think that Alaska Housing probably can come up with something that at least gets it started going that direction. I think we ought to maybe take a look at that and see what they can do, see what they can't do. I'll have staff take a look and get to go to Alaska Housing and see if we can feel out that area.
One thing, as far as the inspection system goes, that could be someone under a private enterprise system. It's not the best thing in the world to have the state get in there and let them come along. And so each house that's going to be financed by Alaska Housing Finance could have a certificate from an inspection company that inspected the house. Certified to
licensing fee normally is set to offset whatever employee expense necessary to go out and inspect a job. I think you make a good point. Maybe we can encourage them to subcontract this out to private enterprise and pass those revenues through, particularly in instances where they cannot seem to muster sufficient staff. You're right, government can't be all things for all people, and this may be another instance where the private sector can do it better.
Yeah.
That's a new government issue. I think I
regularly have been involved. Okay. I was thinking in this regard, what might be related to that, who have private inspection businesses in the Fairbanks area to help certain companies that are actually operating now. One thing, insurance companies sometimes insist that the buildings be inspected even when they're out in the borough. The borough has no inspection, especially if fire companies don't. There has been a small amount of business that has been successful. And I know our fire department does just fire inspection.
I was hoping that the Department of Labor would
every state office I could find down the line to try to find out where the meeting was at tonight, and finally I called Allied or the general contractor, and they said possibly, so I called the office.
What date do they have in the paper?
They said Thursday the 26th or something.
Thursday the 26th?
Yeah. Something like
that. Yeah, I want.
Thursday the 25th. What year did
I didn't. Say? Somebody, that's what somebody told me today that they thought they said. I said, well, that obviously is right.
I was saying.
Circa the 26th.
That's interesting. That's the second time we have another hearing that more mines in it, the more the better the conditions. I mean, you know, we're not the, I don't plan to, I know this guy wouldn't go plan at all. No. I mean, we're just like you guys. I mean,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it'd be kind of interesting. I know we're seeing sort of the interface of what you're doing at the grassroots level with getting out there on the contracts and all those kind of things, but it'd be really interesting to get some of the people that are in the Department of Labor in the Enforcement Division who are working with things on a day-to-day basis. Not, I know we go down to Juneau and we see all these people that come off the top and they say, and by the time it filters down, we never can see what the effect is on the people that really get the service. And I think it'd be really interesting just to have one or two enforcement people in the Department of Labor, if they're the ones that are overseeing it, just to see what they say.
I think what we'll do, the Ketchikan meeting is Consolidated with Anchorage meeting, we'll hold a teleconference. So the persons that may have been screwed up because of the newspaper person being wrong, at least you'll have another shot at it through the teleconference network. We'll hopefully take our time to get those persons correct. And hopefully at that meeting, we will have your members and perhaps we can ask the person to have the finance and also provide testimony as to what their system is, so at least people throughout the state will have a better handle for those two government departments.
That would be 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock.
When does Juneau, when does Southeast go?
30th of
October.
And they would be here, and 12 o'clock would be here. So people could come here between 5 and 8 next morning.
Is it too late to get a statewide teleconference for
Ketchikan? I'll check tomorrow anyway and put it on and find out. I don't think it's unreasonable. We've got to make it,
what time are we meeting?
5 to 7.
Is that true to work with your time schedule? What's that? Be 5 to 7. What date is it?
Next Monday. Be next Monday.
If we can work this out, we will rule the house. Specific notice. We'll put another person in the paper for our conference. This location. And John, if you and Neil propose that you guys can go to pitch me.
I was going to stay in Anchorage.
It's going to take me 2 days to get there.
I've got a real tight schedule.
Okay. All right. So I need to coordinate the efforts in Anchorage. All right.
Okay. Statewide teleconference, is that right? If he's going to be in Anchorage, does that mean we want a statewide teleconference?
Yeah. Okay. Let's do it. And this has been very rewarding this evening. So we can do 10 months more outfit on the barn line. That's what you've had. So we can do that. John, you want to then?
I'll work on this then, yeah.
Well, Rick, you want to take care of Anchorage? Neil, you want to come to Ketchikan?
I've already won my ticket.
Sure.
Okay. Well.
we need the representation.
We still have to have a quorum.
We'll have a quorum
on the air.
So there has to be 5 people in.
No, no problem. We passed the law this last time. We made a quorum. Secured through the teleconference network. The residents has already been
for us or for the matter.
That was for Alaska Housing Finance.
Oh, they got it, huh?
We told them they can do it. We weren't smart enough to say we do it ourselves.
No official action is going to be taken, so it's a matter of a hearing of each other.
Let's see if we can line it up.
Maybe we'll be there.
I got an idea. Why don't you have Steve find out if we got a teleconference? Figure out if it's going to work and we'll schedule it. We're coming or going.
No, I would hope that.
Just get out. Turn behind the horse.
Yeah, even though they missed, but get on the horn and you're out there with no other contact. I'm getting them interested in this teleconference. You'll hear what they were going on. And you're asking everybody to testify.
hopefully we're solutions. I think we all know the problems. You know, like I said, you know, we're all down there, we're here. We don't care for these people like you. Juno's kind of an island surrounded by reality. You guys are the reality surrounding that. And we hear the same people down there, the same lobbyists, day after day. And so we're not really getting any in issues like this.
I've got one more question. Say that we're coming into the tag end of our building season now, and instead of getting a lot more red tape on the building permits that are issued, why can't you go right down and take them to the Department of Labor and say, okay, here's your 200 building permits here. Why don't you go down through to check out what you've got for subcontractors? Why go to all the red tape right now to worry about having inspections, having this? You have to right at the top. That's going to take care of 90% of your problems with no money involved other than the people that you've got already working. But you can probably get out of the office to go down and check them down. In a week's time, if you can shake one person loose, you can probably get rid of 80% of your problems.
Who issues
But once again, I mean, it's why not go right to the heart of the problem?
Sure.
Why not just call the Department of Labor and say, hey, you know, you've got 200 permits, go do your job.
But do all, what I'm asking you, does all the permits, or do all constructors need permits?
Yes, sir.
I mean, outside of the city?
Yes, sir.
To get outside the organized borough.
You go right down and you've got to lift right in the office where they're down there. All you got to do is call the Department of Labor, and I don't think you would specific. If you've got a problem, you can. We do. If you've got a problem, you go call and say, hey, go check it. Also, but why not just run a blanket check on,
sure,
on the first 100? It used to be that way here, but it's not anymore. It doesn't necessarily have to be conducted with building code. You'll only get half of on the IRS end of it if the labor board pushing. I mean, you've got them coming or going. If you get somebody out there and say, hey, this is the way that the law reads, you know, either you go with the law or you go to jail. One of the two. I mean, that's pure and simple. And you've got the departments to enforce it now.
If you've got the time, if you would come down to this office and you're doing the independent kind of working hours and get a copy of the statute, and ask the officer to be more specific in saying which statutes that have to be enforced and which by the time you're made. It's better coming from your mouth than it is of ours, you know, in some of these hearings, but we will have a Department of Labor. So tell them what you want here at this office.
One of the things, you know, I don't know if we're going to have a between question between now and next Monday. I think we're, you know, it's the kind of time of year you guys tend to be busy. But as looking at it realistically, we're going to be working into and gearing up for next session starting in January. We can continue to get specifics out of you guys between now and then. You'll probably have more time, you know, a month or 6 weeks from now, you might be able to now try and help us nail this thing down.
It does seem like the biggest sting that the criminal contractors have really set up to pay attention to is when they were checked as to their subcontractors, whether they were licensed or not, but they weren't had to pay their withholding on all the money that they had paid their tax money.
Okay.
Okay, gentlemen, if there's nothing else to come before the committee at this time, we just take two with Mr. Jones, did you want to talk about the third? No one has to be heard at this time. We were bringing the meeting to a close. So be it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
What did you ever do to that pile of cellulose in the lake? The pile kind of shoveled out of there.
I was going to copy the